The following is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
It's the mitzvah of having to honor a kohen, right? Just repeating and memorizing, right? So you get nothing else from this, right?
No, exactly.
Make sure you know. The mitzvah of having the kohen go first, right? So we spoke about all the forms of honor and the underlying theme of the mitzvah.
Rabbi, didn't we go through these like about 100 ago? Are you slipping these in again?
Something to be repeated periodically. we wouldn't want you to keep
There's
it up.
There's really 512 mitzvahs.
Another extra 100.
Pretty famous home run.
Okay, so the idea here, the underlying idea here, that the honor, when a king has a servant, if you honor the servant, by honoring the servant, you're actually honoring the king, right? So the Kohanim are officially God's servants, right? They're the ones that represent the Jewish people, they're God's servants. So the rest of us have the responsibility that we have to honor the Kohen in order to demonstrate the fact that we are honoring God. If you abuse or insult the guard or the servant, so then in fact what you're doing is you're abusing the master. Okay, that is 269. 270 is the prohibition for the Kohen Gadol to come into contact with even his next of kin. Like the Kohen Gadol, whereas a regular Kohen is not allowed to come into contact with a dead body if it's outside people. A Kohen Gadol is not even allowed to come into contact with his next of kin, right? And specifically, the way the Torah describes it is that he's not allowed to enter into the tent or into the building, the structure, where they are. That's why I told you yesterday that a dead body gives off impurity even in an enclosed structure. So the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to come into contact with even his next of kin. Okay, now, that means that if he's serving in the temple, the Kohen Gadol is serving the Beis HaMikdash, or whatever he's doing, he's not even allowed to be under the same roof or touch his next of kin. The idea is that what the Kohen Gadol, we're going to see in the end what the Kohen Gadol really represents. But one of the ideas is the Kohen Gadol represents the highest possible spiritual level of the Jewish people. Remember we talked about if somebody kills somebody accidentally. Right? So who is it that's responsible for that? He doesn't leave the city of refuge until the death of the Kohen Gadol. What does the Kohen Gadol got to do with any of this? Right? The answer is that if the Kohen Gadol would be on the appropriate spiritual level, thank you very much. You'll show me how to work it later because I'm going to keep it. Is this supposed to be up? The mic? Okay. So the Kohen Gadol is supposed to be on such a high spiritual level that even the death of a relative doesn't affect him. Right. Imagine that. Look what you're talking about over here. You're talking about a man who's supposed to be so detached from the physical world that even if the next of kin dies, he is supposed to keep working in the basement as if nothing happened. Right? And it's all supposed to be a symbol, a representation of what level a man could reach. Right? So the Kohen Gadol has no connection to the physical, or as little as possible. We'll see that in the marriage relationships in a second. Yeah. I'm sorry? No, he doesn't go into the state of mourning, nothing. He continues on as is. Right? And you talk again, there's only one Kohen Gadol among the Jewish people. Now you talk about that. You talk about a very high level. Right? So that's the that's number 270. Now, 271.
Is that all the time? He just lives in isolation?
He doesn't live in isolation. He can live at home and he lives at home, he has a wife and family, right? But he has to strive for some type of physical perfection, for some spiritual perfection, right? And he's supposed to have as little contact with the physical as possible, right? Death is always the reason we, very often, death is the reminder to us that the physical, we came in here because it's a little cozier, right? The death is the reminder, it looked like there are more people attending, you know, in the other room. Death is always the reminder of the temporal. We spoke about the temporal nature of this world. I had a guy in high school. You know, in high school when everybody gives a quote, Right? All of a sudden, all the guys who've been doing drugs for 4 years turn philosopher, right? When they got to give a quote for the yearbook, right? You know, so as the guy goes, now it's time to go and look up a quote somewhere, right? They quote from this philosopher and that philosopher. You know, if anybody should be quoted, probably their parole officer, right? But they're quoting, all of a sudden they're quoting from philosophers, right? So I remember one guy who was the class clown, right? This was the guy who was the class clown who came up with the best quote of all. Right. He didn't, the quote has a lot of meaning, not quite the context that he meant. His quote was, don't take life too seriously because you're not going to get out of it alive anyway. Right. Which is many people, I've heard that quote from other people too. Right. You know, don't, you know, it's not, you know, nobody leaves here standing up, as they say. Right. But the quote is used, the stipler used to tell people the exact same thing. Right, the disciple used to tell people, "Don't take this world too seriously." That means sometimes people get upset all about, you know, "Oh my goodness, my car got a scratch on it." I think, "Well, how can I go on?" Right, or you know, the curtains that we ordered orange curtains, and they're just a shade. You know, they're not quite as orange as we wanted. A little too much yellow. Right, my goodness, I'm devastated. How can I go on? Right, there. If a person saw it, a person understood that, you know, after all, you know, how important is it really? They say the Chafetz Chaim used to look at the carpeting in his house, or what was it, his window shade. His wife once bought several window, I think, new window curtains or something, and the Chafetz Chaim looked at me and said, "Yep, there's Maseches Baba Kama on the wall." Meaning, the amount of money I'm going to have to earn to pay for that, I could have used that time they're earning the money for studying Baba Kama. Right? So it's all the same thing of taking of being involved in the physical. So the Kohen Gadol has to be detached. Right? That's the lesson. The rule is you need as much out of you have to be careful. Sometimes people get a little over enthusiastic, right? Well, nothing matters. I may as well eat bread and drink water and nothing matters. None of the physical. So you just have to remember that what is important is to you have to take as much out of the physical world as you need to maintain your equilibrium. Right? If a person doesn't, we have to realize what level we're on. We can't fool ourselves. A person has to understand that there are certain things we do need. God created the world that we should take from the physical, but not that it should become a pursuit. It should be a means to an end, right? Not an end in and of itself. And everybody has to be, you have to be honest with yourself. If you're not honest with yourself, you end up sad and depressed. Like people try, so I've seen people, guys, and people try to be very frum, right? Very, very dedicated, and they end up trying to deprive themselves of certain basic needs. Right. If you're into tennis, keep playing tennis even after you become frum. Right? Because if you cut everything, then all of a sudden the world looks very morbid, the world looks very dry. Right? And then a person gets depressed and he ends up throwing everything away anyway. Right? So and that's part of your avodas Hashem, that you have to remain even though Hashem b'simcha is a verse, right? You must serve Hashem with joy. And the joy is whatever gives you the equilibrium and the balance necessary in order to serve God best. Right? So balance is essential. Then again, if you're planning on becoming the Kohen Gadol, right, things change, right? But there is only, you know, that somebody once came to Hillel, right? He heard in that, you know, the famous story with the convert, the guy came to Hillel and said, "Convert me on condition that I become, that you teach me the Torah while I'm standing on one foot." I mean, just imagine that. Imagine going up. Imagine, I hate the lahavdil, elef, alfei havdol. Imagine going up to the Pope. Right, and say, "Hey, Pope, how you doing? Why don't you tell me all about your religion? I got about 5 minutes." Right? Imagine saying that to the Pope. Right? Oh, my goodness, all the Jewish liberal writers for the New York Times would take to pieces. Right? But if you say it to Hillel about the Torah, they'd be the first ones. You know, hey, great! You know, what a wonderful attitude. I had to get that off my chest. The imagine a guy comes up to Hillel. He says to Hillel, "Tell me the entire Torah. I'm standing on one foot." Right? So Hillel said, "Then don't do to others what's hated to you. You should do to other people." Right? Now, in that same Gemara, it's in Tractate Shabbos, in that same Gemara, another man was walking past a shul, right, and also a potential convert, and he heard the Torah reading, and they were reading about the fancy clothing that the Kohen Gadol gets to wear, right? The Kohen Gadol wear these fancy ornaments with the chest plate, very attractive, striking clothing. So this man was, he passed by the shul, and he said, "Gee, who gets to wear that?" And they said to him, "The Kohen Gadol." So he said, "Great." And he came to Shammai, and he said, "Convert me on condition that I become the Kohen Gadol." So Shammah said, get out of here, right? Chase them away. So he went to Hillel. He said, convert me on condition I can become the Kohen Gadol. So Hillel said, okay, I want you to start studying. So nobody, you know, he can't become the leader without learning all the, you know, what a leader has to do. If you ever want to become a king, you got to read the manual for kings, right? If you want to become a Kohen Gadol, you got to study the manual. He says, go study what it is that a leader has to do. So he starts studying the Torah, and he gets to the portion that says, any non-Kohen who enters into the temple is liable for the death penalty. And he comes across this verse in his study, right? So he comes back and he says, hey, tell me, who does this verse apply to, right? So he'll say, this applies even to David, Melech Yisrael. Even King David is not allowed past a certain point in the temple because he's not a Kohen. So the convert understood that, well, obviously David and Melech isn't allowed there, so how could I possibly expect to become the Kohen Gadol, right? So he didn't. Right, you didn't become the Kohen Gadol, right? That's why I say, if any of you are planning on becoming the Kohen Gadol, it's an exercise in futility, right? You got to be a Kohen A, and even then it becomes very difficult. Right, we'll see some of the other qualifications necessary.
Right, you need to work on that punchline.
What's that? Thanks, Drew. Yes, you had to be there. The 271, it's on tape that you said that, Drew. 271. Is the prohibition for the Kohen Gadol to come into contact, to become Tameh, with any type of impurity, right? The first one is specifically impurity in the same structure. The second one is 271 is the prohibition for the Kohen Gadol to become Tameh through any type of ritual impurity. Now, there's one exception where even a Kohen Gadol is allowed and recommended, not actually, not even allowed, he is obligated to come into contact with the dead body. Know where it is. There's one case where the Kohen Gadol is obligated to come into contact with the dead body. Do you know where it is?
Is it with a pregnant woman who's dying in labor?
Okay, that's a pretty, well, she's not dead yet, right? And hopefully his job is to keep her alive, but it's a very good example. Certainly any life-threatening circumstances, right? The Kohen Gadol would have to rush into the fire, right, and you know, hopefully not burn his chest plate, right? But he'd have to run into the fire or try to save somebody who's in life-threatening circumstances to keep them from dying, right? A woman who's in labor is a good example. But that's somebody who's not yet dead.
Oh, I mean, she dies in labor.
Oh, she dies in labor, and now he's got to deliver the child, right? Well, the coin, we learned yesterday, ironically, that a coin can't be a doctor, so he probably wouldn't be there, right? But if he was, let's say it was a Baal Tshuva. He learned medicine, studied medicine, then he became frum, and he became the Kohen Gadol. See where he could get to, guys? Right? And he became the Kohen. He was a Kohen. He was a doctor. So besides the chest plate, he's also got a stethoscope hanging around the thing, right? And the Kohen Gadol happens to be in the delivery room where a woman goes into labor in the Temple Mount, right? Could happen, right? So the Kohen Gadol would have to deliver. It's called a Mace Mitzvah. A Mace Mitzvah is a dead body that has no one to attend to it. That means, the example the Gemara uses, a Mace Mitzvah is a body's out on the road. You're walking along the road, you're all by yourself, and you come across a dead body. Right? There the halacha is that any Kohen, or even a Kohen Gadol, would have to ritually defile himself. That means come into contact with a dead body in order to bury him. Remember, again, I told you there's a Mishnah. Somebody, I once saw this in a book that was kind of ridiculing Judaism. Why was I reading such a book? It's a different kasha, right? But there's a book ridiculing Judaism. At the time, I didn't even realize. They were trying to sport. They're making jokes at the expense of Judaism. And they're talking about the ridiculousness of the following Mishnah. There's a Mishnah that talks about, you know what a Nazirite is? Somebody who makes the vow that he's not going to drink wine and he lets his hair grow long, right? And one of the third characteristic of a Nazirite, is that he's not allowed to come into contact with a dead body either. Right. So the Mishnah says, what happens if a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir are walking together and they come across a dead body, right? That has no idea which one of them should defile himself ritually to come into contact with it. So I remember this book pointing this out as, ha ha ha, what a ridiculous scenario, right? And it probably happened, if we look historically, it probably happened every day or very often, right? But I remember that was used as a source of ridicule. Right? But the Kohen Gadol and another, the situation the Mishnah mentions where you could have potentially two people, neither of whom are allowed to come together with a dead body, and under circumstances, one of them is going to have to. It's called a Mace Mitzvah. So in your example, for a woman who's in labor, if, let's say, for example, a woman were to die in labor and the child is not yet born, the kohen would have to, and he's needed for whatever reason, the kohen would have to help out in the delivery process. Right? So that's all called a mace mitzvah.
Can he go to the funeral of his parents?
No. No. He cannot attend the funeral. He has to stay in the base of Mikdash and continue the service. Right? He's not allowed to the funeral. He's not allowed to come into contact with them. No mourning whatsoever.
Even a Kohen Gadol who's converted?
Kohen Gadol who's converted.
Who's a convert?
That's a contradiction in terms. You cannot, a Kohen Gadol cannot be, a convert cannot become a Kohen Gadol. A convert cannot become a Kohen Gadol.
If you were to find like a dead body, like you said, the scenario where Kohen Gadol would need to defile himself, wouldn't it be possible to see it and then just, I don't know, pick up your portable telephone and...
Let's say you're walking, you're stuck in the desert with somebody, right? The classic case of Rabbi Akiva, right, where two people are in the desert with only one canteen, mm-hmm. right? And so what do? Right? You keep it for yourself and you let the other guy die. And what happens after he dies? You got to bury him. I guess that's the way you comfort him while the two of you are together. He said, don't worry, uncle. Right? I got to drink the water, but don't worry, I'll bury you. Right? You won't be left on your own. Right? So then over there, he's a mace mitzvah. Classic case of a mace mitzvah. Mace mitzvah is used, as you know, it's used in the colloquial to describe any mitzvah where somebody's got to do it and nobody really wants to do it. You know where very often this happens? Somebody's getting married. You're invited to the wedding. And you don't feel like going to the wedding. No one feels like going to the wedding. It's somebody who nobody really wants, nobody's friends with, nobody wants to go to, right? Though that very often the expression people use for that is it's a mace mitzvah, right? That it's that it means that if you don't go, nobody's going to end up going, then it becomes even a bigger mitzvah to do so, right? Anything that no one else feels like doing, it's used, as we describe it, as quote-unquote a mace mitzvah. It's about the purest definition of mace mitzvah. Okay, next one is the mitzvah for the Kohen Gadol to marry a virgin. Now, not only she has to be a virgin, she is supposed to be in the state of being a na'ara. A na'ara means a young lady who is between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half. Right? That is a na'ara. That means she is at the beginning of her teen years, right? And it's before it is. In other words, it is right when the hormones are kicking in, right? And the Torah says that the Kohen Gadol must marry such a young lady. Now, the reason for it is obvious, right? Why do you think that the Torah would recommend this, right? Besides getting around that the society has, you know, statutory, without worrying about statutory rape and all this stuff. In the times of the Torah, first of all, people's natures have changed anyway, but people were getting married much, much younger. Right? In those days, people got married much, much younger. Chofetz Chaim got married when he was 16. People get married at 15. Nowadays, I have an aunt who's married to my uncle is a Satmar Chassid, right? And his wife was engaged to him before her 16th birthday, right? You know, they have in Mayor Sharm nowadays, if a girl makes it to 18, people start talking, you know? I go, you know, what's taking her so long, you know? So you know, it all depends on your society. And it's not just the Torah society. In other cultures also, girls used to get married at 13, 14, no problem, right? You know, what do we
need?
What?
Yeah, 14.
14.
Yeah.
There you go. What greater proof can you have, right? Right. So over here, the mitzvah is for the Kohen Gadol to marry the young lady as soon as she becomes her career. You know, she's just gone through puberty, right? And now her teen years are just beginning. Those formative years, right? Right. So the Kohen Gadol should marry her now at the onset of the teen years. Now, why do you think the Torah wants that?
But she hasn't had her period yet, but you said it was after.
Okay, the period is one thing. I mean, if she doesn't have her period now, she's going to get her period. Like, and at a certain point, she will get her period. Sometimes this girl could begin even before that. But she could get her, but she's going to get the period later anyway. Right? You're right. There is a certain, it has to do with purity and impurity. It has to do with certain holiness. That means a young lady who is now going to marry to the Kohen Gadol, she's going to be exerting the greatest influence on him. Right, that is the nature of marriage. Right, the one person that exerts the greatest influence on you is from the tape recorder. It's your wife. Right, those are the facts. Right, so the one person is going to be exerting the greatest influence on the Kohen Gadol is going to be his wife. Now, the young lady, as soon as the teen years begin, then the mind begins focusing on certain areas of life. Right. The more pure she is, that means if the Kohen Gadol is able to marry her right at the beginning of those 10 years, so she will never have had a chance, or as little minimize her chance as much as possible, for having been focused and thinking about and visualizing anything that goes on that really is not so holy, not so kadosh, right? Therefore, the Torah says he must marry. Now, if he's married already, so he's married, right? But if he would want to take a second life, a second wife, for instance, right? Which, you know, by Torah law, he could. If he would want to take a second wife, let's say his first wife would die, then he has to remarry, right? Then he is supposed to marry a young lady who is, now, if he can't find one, so he could marry a young lady who's older than that. But there is no waiver on the halacha that she must be a virgin. Okay? She must be a virgin. The Gemara says, and this is why there is a premium on her being pure when she marries a kohen gadol. This is one of the Gemara says that when a wedding marriage takes place, a woman, you know what a bris is? When we say a bris milah, what does the word bris mean?
Covenant.
It's a covenant, right? The Gemara uses very interesting terminology. The Gemara says a woman only enters a covenant with the man who has made her into a vessel. Right? That means that the covenant that she is making, a woman is making a covenant with the man who makes her. That means when a man marries a woman, the fact that she's a virgin, right, and she is now dedicated to him because psychologically she sees him as the one who has changed her status, right? And psychologically, emotionally, she now views him a certain way, and the certain loyalty that she has to her husband is based on that physical relationship, right? It doesn't mean it's obviously not all based on a physical relationship, but the physical relationship complements the emotional relationship, right? And the that partnership, part of that partnership is forged by the fact that she feels a certain bond to him, which she would not feel if she's been with another man before him. Right? Therefore, for a kohen gadol, that again is a requirement. There's a premium on that requirement that the wife should feel a bond with the husband, which wouldn't exist otherwise if she was not a virgin. Okay, so that's the idea, and that's the limitation on the kohen gadol. Any questions about that?
How old do the kohen gadols usually marry? I mean, are they?
Okay, that's a good question. So if you see, how does somebody become a kohen gadol? Right. How does somebody become a kohen gadol? So there are two ways to become a kohen gadol. You can either be appointed, right? Or generally, even if, let's say somebody's father was a kohen gadol. So if a father died, the son would automatically become the kohen gadol if he was fitting for it. That means, if the son was fitting to be kohen gadol, and another person was fitting to be kohen gadol, the son gets the nod, right? So that's how you became the kohen gadol. Now, you can become a kohen gadol at an older age also. That's why I say this halacha is for a single kohen gadol or a kohen gadol who wants to add another wife or his first wife dies, right? Or he divorces his wife. A kohen gadol can divorce his wife, right? But if all of these things happen, right, then the kohen gadol has to get married. So when the kohen gadol wants to get married, the Torah says this is the limitation. This is who the kohen gadol has to marry.
So it could be any of any age.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The kohen gadol could be any age. Absolutely. Right? And again, we're conditioned by our society. All the ideas of marriage ages are something that we find shocking because we're not used to it. Right? But if you were living in the ancient world, right, so then they got married younger. Remember, they were dying younger. Right? At a certain point in history, if you made it to 35 or 40, you're doing well. Right, because you know, people, the mortality rate was much. There were all sorts of diseases. Things were happening. Right? So people, you know, people got married younger because the life expectancy was much shorter. Right? Nowadays, the life expectancy is longer, but people, in Torah world, people still are getting married in their early 20s. Right, and in the Hasidic world, they tend to get married younger. Right, the girls anyway. The girls are generally engaged by the time they're 17, 18.
Does the lifespan issue enter in here? Because I mean, how long were members of the tribe expected to live during the period when these mitzvahs were in effect? They had passed the point, right, where guys were living to be very old.
Right, right. And all through Jewish, you know, we're talking about regular life, basically the regular lifespans. Regular lifespans. But a kohen gadol could go on for a while. Yochanan was kohen gadol for 80 years. Yochanan kohen gadol was the kohen gadol for 80 years. Now, it doesn't say what age is. He may have started, became the kohen gadol as a bar mitzvah.
But
right?
Still, that means that the issue of being, you know, 35 and dying doesn't
No, they don't take that into consideration. Right. Right? You just got to go on. Right. By the way, there's a command that the other Kohanim have to make the Kohen Gadol wealthy. Right. If a Kohen Gadol takes over the position and he doesn't have money, the other Kohanim, they have a shower. Right. They have a shower. The other Kohanim are supposed to shower him with financial gifts in order to make him wealthy. Right. Because part of one's spiritual level, right, has to do with if you have that state of joy that you have to be in, right, part of the importance and the dignity of the position requires that you should be important, that you should be wealthy. Okay? Question?
Yeah, is it also true that you can't co-head on the divorce court?
Correct. Not only coin bill, even a regular coin can marry a divorce woman.
One case I heard of, which is related to that, but which I wanted to know what would happen in such a situation, is a case where two kids were at school and the teacher was showing them what happens in a marriage ceremony, and she took a boy and a girl out of the class and said, right, we're going to marry you. There's a ceremony, this will be done. And she went through the process. And then word got around eventually that wife had had about it, told them they should apply for a divorce if they weren't married as such. Now, would that girl then not be able to marry a girl?
Okay, the truth is that scenario or some type of imitation of it has happened. On several occasions, they have, I think Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was asked, they had, the most common cases where you have like a mixed high school, right, and the guy comes out of Gemara class, and they're learning Tractate Kedushin, all about betrothing women, the guy comes out of the Gemara class, he takes his pen, and he sees Zelda down the hall, hey Zelda, here, he throws her in bed and says, you're betrothed to me, right, everybody has a good laugh, right, and it turns out he and his two friends were watching him. Right, so they're witnesses, right? And all of a sudden, there's a halachic question. Maybe Zelda and him are betrothed, right? And remember, if she gets married, if she marries somebody else, it's adultery, right? At that point, they are betrothed. That means they're not officially, they're not completely, they're halachically engaged, right? They're not married, but the only way to dissolve the engagement is with a divorce, right? So, under certain circumstances, if you could determine that there were two kosher witnesses there, and remember, the fact that she says, but I was just joking around, doesn't mean anything in halacha. Because we're not just saying, well, how do I know she was? Maybe Zelda's thinking to herself, hey, finally the big day. She's had a crush on this guy for a couple of years. He's finally given her the time of day. He may have meant this as a joke, but how do we know? He never said it. He never sent out any disclaimer, right? All we can go in halacha is you go with what the facts are. The facts are he said to her, Aramakudashasin, gave her something worth a fruit, and she said yes. Right? So you could have a situation like that. There was one case, I think the case where they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein was there was a Purim carnival. If they set up in Jewish communities, they always have a Purim carnival with various booths, right? You throw a wet sponge at somebody's face, you know, and all sorts of stuff like a pin the tail on Haman, you know, all these types of, the shtick stuff. So they had one booth, which is called a marriage booth, right? Where I think some guy was in the booth marrying girls, right? Again, and everybody was having a good time. That turns out he's married to 40 women or something, right? And something like that, or 40 women are involved who are officially betrothed. Right, and they had to find out, get a halachic authority. The ramifications are exactly what you're saying. That if they do get divorced, then from that point on, they're automatically, A, they're forbidden to marry a kohen from that point on, because they are divorced. B, whether you like it or not, there's a stigma. That's as far as a practical tragedy. That is the biggest practical tragedy, that they can no longer marry a kohen. All right, so not there isn't, you know, so you'll find someone else. You know, you find someone else to marry. Right? It doesn't mean she's dead set on marrying a Kohen. There are other rich guys around, right? They're not just Kohenim, right? But B, and more importantly, that a woman who is divorced, whether you like it or not, she is stigmatized, right? And somebody else potentially may not want to marry her simply when he hears she's divorced, right? So in a society where people date and it's not a big deal, but in a society where people are looking, you know, what's with this girl? Yeah, she's a very fine girl. She's got wonderful meters. She's nice looking. She's got a lot of money, but she's been divorced. Right? But it was nothing. What do you mean it was nothing? Right? Well, the story was he threw her again. Oh yeah, right? And then you get people backing off. Right? So it's a tragedy. Right? So if it is, the halakhic authority were to rule that is valid, then they must go through a proper divorce. Okay. That is 270. That was 272?
Right.
Okay. 273 is the prohibition for a coin Gadol to marry a widow, and
why does it specify a virgin when it must be a virgin in any case?
Again?
You said the law specifies you should marry a virgin with between these years.
Right.
Why does it specify a virgin when the wife has to be a virgin?
It doesn't.
I don't know, that's about to...
It's an afterthought.
Right, right.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. The Kohen Gadol has to marry a widow, and is not allowed to marry a widow, and there is actually a mitzvah in the Torah that this command prevents the Kohen Gadol from fulfilling. Right? You know what that command is. Let's say...
Correct.
Let's say, you know the halacha, there's something called yibum, where if a man dies... And he and his wife did not have any children. So the law in the Torah is that the brother of the man who's died now marries his widow. Right? And they try to have offspring that they were going to name after the deceased brother. The Kohen Gadol is not allowed to perform Yibum. The Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry the widow of his brother. And therefore, he has to do the other procedure, which is called Chalitza. Chalitza is the procedure with the spitting in the shoe, right, where she is released and she is now allowed to go and marry somebody else. Okay, so the Kohen Gadol is actually, by merit of his position, he is prevented from being involved in that mitzvah. Okay?
Does that mean that he performs the chalitza, or just this issue, or does he have to be absolved from the whole ceremony?
No, he goes through the chalitza ceremony. Right? The chalitza ceremony would be done, and the Kohen Gadol is involved in the chalitza ceremony. Now, the next one is a technical mitzvah. If you want afterwards, I'll give it to you. 275. And this is the last one. Now we're going to tie in the entire thing together. It's a fabulous explanation here. 275 is the following. That a Kohen who has any type of physical imperfection is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash.
Please turn the tape to the other side.
Arabe. En réaffirmant leurs exigences de paix, écrit le journal gouvernemental Tishrin, les dirigeants arabes ont mis fin aux manœuvres.